Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, or a nice cold one on a warm spring day hanging out on the deck. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the GM Shuffle.
For me, what Harbaugh brings to the table is a problem solver, and he's going to make them tougher, and he's going to give them the team, he's going to give them the ingredients they need, and that culture in the Chargers will change.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to another edition of the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your host, Femi Abebefe. As always, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos. Mike, we don't even have time to waste here because last night we got the big news that the Chargers, who's got it better than the Los Angeles Chargers? They're hiring Jim Harbaugh to be their head coach. We felt that this was coming. He was the odds-on favorite in the betting market at our show sponsor, DraftKings. And now Los Angeles lands the big hire of this coaching carousel so far.
Well, you got to give the Chargers credit. I mean, you know, look, if you're competing against Sean Payton and you're competing against Andy Reid, you better bring somebody to the table who's got a track record. And, you know, Jim has a track record, 71% winning percentage with the 49ers, took them to a Super Bowl, won a national championship at Michigan, turned that program around, turned Stanford's program around, turned the University of San Diego. So, yeah, I mean, this is a great hire. I mean, Jim is it's funny on Twitter, they were talking about Jim being a Rockford Files fan and Jim Rockford's daughter, who is on Twitter and puts out pictures of him. I sent him a text saying, all you need now is the trailer in Malibu. You'll be perfect. It's outstanding, you know, and get that trailer in Malibu, you know, charge $200 a day plus expenses and turn around the Chargers. One thing he's going to do, he's going to make them tough, right? Yep. I mean, Harbaugh is the most competitive human you're ever going to meet in your life. And I think his brother really shed some light into who he is, right? Like, everybody thinks because he played quarterback in the NFL that he's an offensive play caller. He's not. He's a strategist. He builds the team. He creates the culture. And he lets his coaches, who he holds accountable. See, Jim's truly a head coach. Jim's going to hold coaches accountable. He's going to make sure they do their job, and he's going to do his job. And he doesn't try to get into the minutia of, okay, here's what we're doing, here's what I want to do. He knows what's going on the offensive side, but his skill set is one of making the team tough, bringing mental toughness to the team, you know, understanding how to strategize the game. So, you know, what they've hired is a strategist. In the past, the Chargers have been on that tactician role. Staley, a tactician, right? Anthony Lynn, a tactician. This will be the first time that they've moved to Los Angeles where they actually have a strategist where they can compete against Andy Reid, compete against Sean Payton. And we could talk about it. I mean, to me, the Raiders and Tom Telesco as the new GM and Antonio Pierce, they got their work cut out for them. They're going to have their work cut out for them because, you know, everybody can embrace the hiring. Everybody can embrace the changes in Las Vegas. The competition in the West is on a coaching level is really, really high.
And as a football fan, I'm just happy to see Harbaugh back into the NFL because, I mean, like growing up, like you see Captain come back, you think of him as an NFL quarterback, and obviously his run with San Francisco had a lot of success. He's just an interesting personality that I think the NFL was missing when he went back to Michigan, and obviously going back to your alma mater, that's a special time for him, winning the national title in his last game as well. But I'm just excited to see him back in the NFL and in the mix with these Hall of Fame head coaches like Andy Reid, like Sean Payton. But one thing that I wanted to bounce off you, because you mentioned that he's a guy who coaches his coaches. And one thing I was listening to is Daniel Jeremiah over at the NFL Network. He said that the one thing that Harbaugh is really, really good at, among other things, but he's really, really good at scouting coaching talent. And when you look back at his track record, you see a lot of these coaches, whether it was Fangio when it was with him in San Francisco, and Greg Roman was with him as well. And then at Michigan, I mean, Mike McDonald, we've been raving about him all postseason long. He was the DC at Michigan. Now everyone's raving about Jesse Minter and all these guys that were the DC at Michigan. Like he's been really good at getting those coaches to do and kind of implement his philosophy of toughness, which is why he's had success everywhere he's gone.
Well, they also benefit from his mental and physical toughness that he brings to the team and the connectivity that he brings to the team. You know, the part of being a head coach is to hold the coaches accountable. I've said this many times, right? The head coach's job is to demand from the assistants, or else you don't get better in the season. You don't improve during the year. You know, if the head coach isn't monitoring the every 4 weeks, what do we have to do to get better? What do we have to do? I think we're really seeing it clearly in what Andy Reid's done since Christmas Day to where Andy Reid is as we tape this on a Thursday before the championship weekend. What he's done with his team is improved it. You know, he's improved his offensive line tremendously. And so that's the job of a head coach, is you're the guy who's got to fix the problems. And if you're so busy with your head in your play sheet, if you're so busy calling plays, you're not aware of the problems. And you're not aware of the player that you have to develop in September, who's going to help you win games in December. And I think that that's what they're going to get. Look, this is going to be, look, I've never thought, you know, there's all this conversation about how talented the Chargers are. You know, they have talented players. I'm not sure they were talented. They had the depth, and some guys, you always, they love small school guys and the guys you never heard of. But what I will say is, if you add a layer of toughness to this team, physicality, they're going to improve because they have a great quarterback. You can kill the kid because he hasn't won. You could say he doesn't lead his team from behind. I think what you're going to learn here is what I know, and what all those idiots that keep posting the Belichick record without Brady, what you're going to learn is the coach has as much to do with winning as the great quarterback. Because as Josh Allen, we learned, he hasn't won anything, right? That team, I love it. The other day, somebody wrote on Twitter, I forget who the hell it was, but the Bills are really, it's one of the greatest myths in the league. The Bills are one of the least talented teams with a great quarterback. They'd be picking in the top 10 if they had Mac Jones. I mean, they're just not a great team. Watch the tape. They got the shit kicked out of them by the Chiefs up front, the defensive line. They can talk about Ed Oliver being a top 5 defensive tackle. Watch that tape and tell me. Like, they got pushed around bad. Averaged 6.1 yards per attempt in the game, right? Last year, they gave up 5.1 to 3 backup linemen with the Bengals, who don't even want to run the ball. So don't tell me how talented they are. Like, we have such a problem in this league of overset that the Cowboys are talented. No, they're not. The Cowboys underachieved. No, they didn't. The Cowboys overachieved, frankly, considering where their offensive line was, considering what their defensive line was, considering their secondary. They really kind of overachieved for where they got to. You know, the Eagles, they misevaluated their team. They didn't over or underachieve. Their team got older, and the head coach never really fixed the issue. So for me, what Harbaugh brings to the table is a problem solver, and he's going to make them tougher, and he's going to give them the team, he's going to give them the ingredients they need, and that culture in the Chargers will change. The other thing I think it's pretty clear, and I've been studying the Final Four teams here for the last 3 days, everybody talks about player friendly. Everybody talks about You got to have, you know, you can't work the players too hard. Everybody talks about the strength coach has got to have days you rest the players, yada, yada, yada. The final four teams all don't do that. All don't do that. One team has a seventh-round pick at quarterback. One team has a first overall pick at quarterback. One team has the 10th pick in the draft, right, at quarterback. You know, the other team has the 32nd pick in the draft at quarterback. They all work on fundamentals and techniques. They all get better during the season. They all have practices, right? That's never going away. That's never going away. I did a speech yesterday in Austin about the books and what I've written about. And this was two companies were merging together, and the tenets of what wins championship teams are never going out of style. They're never going out of style. What's going out of style is maybe how you get to point A to point B, but what wins consistently in the National Football League is what will always win. And these owners that keep trying to hire tacticians in a strategy league are going to continue to flounder.
Yeah, everybody wants the early 40s, late 30s play caller.
Oh, they're all looking. Somebody sent me a text the other day that said everybody's looking for the next Sean McVay.
Yeah.
You know, and like that, well, Belichick's way of doing business is over with. Like he's fucking Don Corleone, and they're all Virgil Salazzo telling me that, you know, the old man's lost it. No, he didn't. He fucking outfoxed your ass. You might have shot him 8 times in front of a fruit stand, but he came back. He knew it. You know, like, no, Jim Harbaugh. You think Jim Harbaugh's style and Belichick's style are different? Come on.
No.
They're the same. They both demand on the coaches, have accountability in the program, understand how to build a team, operate the team in 3 dimensions, right? We don't even know if J.J. McCarthy's elite. Jim thinks he is,
yeah.
But the way they've run their offense around them, it's hard to tell. It's a little bit like Michael Jordan when he was at Carolina. You know, yeah, he's really talented, but how talented, right? So, I think to me that's the biggest crock of shit. And these owners are just picking people to call plays, and that's great. That's great. There's the next Sean McVay, tactician. That's hard to find another Sean McVay.
It is. He seems to be one of one. But it's like you said, the owners, they listen to a lot of these insiders and pick their brains to see about who they should
hire.
Well,
listen, you can really see the analytical community has really influenced these owners. And it gives them – and again, I'm not against analytics. And we wrote about this for the Daily Coach today. And Roger Martin, who's one of the great leading forefront business owners, talks about it based on what Aristotle said. And you know, I think to me there is a place to analyze certain things that will never change. But things that are rapidly changing is really the most difficult thing to analyze and to use past data. Like, for example, we're getting ready to talk about these conference championship games. We're talking about, you know, the Baltimore Ravens against Patrick Mahomes. Well, this Baltimore Ravens version is completely different than any version that played against them in the past. It's completely different. Like, the past has nothing to do on this present. It's basically you're just reading false notes. I really think, to me, the owner that decides to become the instrument of change, that demands change, that says, okay, look, everybody's doing this, we need to go back to that. I think they're going to be the one that wins.
Yeah, I mean, and we talked about that in depth on Monday's pod about, hey, you got to zig when others are zagging, going up against the grain here. Before we head to break there, real quick on Harbaugh, he gets a 5-year contract. They don't have a general manager in place, so this is going to be sort of the similar setup that we saw when the Niners hired Kyle Shanahan. The GM is going to work for Jim Harbaugh, and it's going to be Jim Harbaugh's show to run there. And a couple of names that they've gone ahead and interview there, Joe Hortz, or Hortiz from the Baltimore Ravens, the director of player personnel, and then also Giants assistant GM Brandon Brown. He's going to interview for that job as well for the Chargers general manager. But like whoever they end up picking, whether it's another person, they're going to be working for Jim Harbaugh.
Right. And I mean, that's good. And I think that's the way it be. I think Ed Dodds from the Colts will get an interview as well. I think that's good. I think to me, that's what you want. He's the leader of the program. And the job of the personnel guy is to get players that fit the profile of what he wants, of what he wants to build the team around. That's the job.
Yeah. And we saw him have a lot of success in San Francisco. Things became a power struggle towards the end. He ends up taking the Michigan job. But if the person's working for Harbaugh, you believe that there'll at least be some cohesion. So a very good day for Los Angeles Chargers fans as Jim Harbaugh will be their next head coach here in the 2024 season. We'll get to the other coaching news coming up next.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. I mean, we have a plethora of games to bet on. You can bet on game-by-game, totals, sides, series props, conference finals, MVP, NBA finals, MVP, whatever you want. DraftKings has it. So all you have to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SHUFFLE. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SHUFFLE only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. So the Chargers have their man, as do the Tennessee Titans, because earlier this week, the Titans hired Brian Callahan, the offensive coordinator for the Cincinnati Bengals. He will be their next head coach, 39 years old, one of those young offensive coaches, has never been a play caller, but will look to call the plays here, we believe, with the Tennessee Titans as they try to get the most out of their young quarterback, Will Levis, or maybe they go down a different direction at that position. But your reaction to Brian Callahan?
No, they're not going down a different direction. This move is all about we're gonna make Will Levis a player. We hired an offensive coach to do that, and I've watched Brian grow up. Valerie and Bill and Brian and Bill Callahan, I've known them for most of my NFL career, the family, and this is a great moment for them to recognize an achievement that, as I keep saying, is harder to get than the United States Senator. So hats off to Brian, and, you know, he's worked for some really good people. Now, he won't be able to bring his dad with him, which is probably going to hurt, but his dad will help him get the right offensive line coach that he needs to build the program around. But this is all about Will Levis and the shift in dynamics in terms of where this organization is going, you know, and I think the owner made it very clear when she said that they think they have a bright young quarterback in Will Levis, and she believes in Rand Carthon to run the organization. He's going to have final say over everything, over everything. I mean, so that's where they're going to go. And we'll see if it all kind of works out. It'll be a challenge, you know, because it's hard. That dynamic, when the emperor of a building is in the GM chair, it makes it very hard on the coach. Makes it very hard on the coach. Because that conflict is built in, right? I draft this guy. I want to make him. You got to make him better. And if it doesn't work, then it's the coaches not making him better. Then it's that constant internal civil war, right? And, you know, and so that's where they are. And they got to see if they can do it. You know, Levis, I don't know. I would have a hard time believing you can go forward. But it was his first year, you know. There were moments that it was okay. There were moments it was really bad. But their offensive line was so bad that it was hard to judge anybody. They gave up 64 sacks as a football team. So, you know, I think to me, the change in Tennessee is more philosophical than anything, right? No longer are they going to be run the ball, play great defense, win the kicking game, and be timely on play action pass. That's over. That's over. And so now Carthon is going to have to demonstrate that he understands how to build a team. How does he build a team? And what kind of team does he want to build? That's to me. And if he has say over the coaching staff, which it clearly says in the release, then Brian's going to have to adhere to what he wants to do. So, you know, I hope it works out. You know, to me, I think somebody's going to have to help without his dad there, who was a head coach, right? Somebody in the building is going to have to help Brian develop into becoming a head coach, or else he's going to be just a tactician. And at some point, you're going to have to be the head coach. You have to stand in front of the players with confidence and the belief that, you know everything that's going on in the program. And if they think they all work for Rand, man, it's hard.
So what you're alluding to is the owner, Amy Adams Strunk, has promoted Rand Carthon to executive vice president slash general manager for the Tennessee Titans. And I do want to read the statement. It's a little bit long, but I think it'll do our viewers some justice here and our listeners. It said, quote, "Over the past year, Rand has impressed me and our staff with his innovative approach to roster building. Rand's exceptional reputation around the league as a talent evaluator and culture builder was a clear competitive advantage during last year's free agency and draft process, as well as our recent search for a head coach. Simply put, Rand Carthon makes the Tennessee Titans a destination for the league's top talent by expanding his role to include full roster control and oversight of the coaching staff. Our organization will now benefit more completely from Rand's unique ability to build and lead a championship caliber football team." So right there, like you mentioned in the statement, it says this guy will, Rand Carthon's the Pied Piper in Nashville, essentially. Like, everything runs through Rand Carthon, and the head coach, Brian Callahan, in his first year will be answering to Rand Carthon as this kind of a young movement there in Nashville. And I'm not saying that it can't work. Maybe it will work, but it's an interesting move though, nonetheless, that Amy Adams Strunk is kind of pushing the chips to the center of the table.
So this is really the perfect example of when I talk about in presentations that this is, we are all on the same page, right? Amy Adams just laid out the page. Everybody's on the same page. But what she fails to understand is it's very difficult to achieve alignment with what she just said, because wins and losses come in, right? Wins and losses come in. And when you have one guy running the program who sits in the executive vice president chair, it becomes very challenging in pro football to create alignment. I lived it, okay? I'm not down on Rand Carthon. I just lived this world with Al Davis, who, I'll say this, I'll go on out on the limb, Al Davis was more qualified to run that situation than Rand is right now. Rand's a young guy, he's never done this before. Al Davis was a coach, was a commissioner. I mean, he was, and it was impossible to do that structure. You can, and Brian can ask his dad. Very hard, very hard. So, you know, this becomes something that we've not seen really work in the NFL. Like, tell me when this works. Tell me when this has worked. I don't know. I've studied the NFL closely, and I'm not saying that the head coach should pick the players. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is when the GM has control over even the coaching staff, then it becomes a problem. Then it becomes a little bit of that conflict that's inherently built in. You've basically set the ground rules for a civil war. You've set the ground rules for the coaches and the scouts butting heads. That's what you've done. Like, if Bill Walsh were alive today and he read this, he would shake his head. He would just shake his head. And he knows this doesn't work. But she thinks it will. I mean, she was too young to remember that her father had this dynamic with Lad Herzik and the great Mike Holovac, who belongs in the Hall of Fame, great personnel man. And then they had the coach. And they had one of the most talented, if you read any chapter of my book, read the chapter about the Houston Oilers. If you read any of that, you'll see why this doesn't work. Like, this has been proven. But she's not aware of it. She doesn't know it. She's taken advice from the league office, and she's going to put this program in place. And Rand's convinced her that he's the guy. The same thing's happening down in Carolina. Now, Carolina might be saying Dan Morgan is really just a byproduct of the Tepper. True. I mean, I don't know how Dan Morgan got the job. He was in every single room. He was part of every single decision. And all of a sudden now he comes out as the guru of football operations in Carolina. I mean, I'm a little bit, you know, you don't need to be Sherlock Holmes to figure this one out now, right? Like, that don't make a lot of sense to me. Like, oh, you didn't want to do this, but, you know, were you the one screaming the loudest to not do it? If you were, then you deserve the job. If you were, then you deserve the job. But if you were a part of it and agreeing and nodding your head and being on the same page, and now all of a sudden, you know, it becomes a little bit of a different situation. So, but look, let's be clear here about the NFL. For all the people that you listen to, and I'm just going to say this very clearly to everybody, the NFL is not about, all these teams are not about winning. They're not. They're not about winning. They're about self-preservation. They're about the people in the building protecting their job. The next book I write, I should call it Guard Your Desk. Yeah. A lot of people are guarding their desk. And so naively, NFL fans think winning is the most important thing. When in reality, it's not. There's only There were eight when Bill Walsh tugged my arm and said, we're only competing against eight in 1984. Today, I think it's down to six.
For a lot of fans, I'm sure that's very heartbreaking, but I think that is the reality. And we've seen that in a number of destinations here. And is it for you just the fact that the general manager picking the coaching staff, like, does that kind of neuter the head coach a little bit here? Because that's going to be the case in Seattle with John Schneider. Like, he's going to be picking the coaching staff. But is that a little bit different?
There's only two people in the building that are really responsible for winning. It's you and the head coach, the GM and the head coach. If the head coach isn't demanding from his assistants, right? Like, if he's not demanding, so where everybody misses this, it's everybody thinks this is about power. It's not about power. It's about building culture. It's about player development. Like, how are we going to develop the players if the head coach doesn't demand from the assistants to develop the players? See, this is the problem. And I learned this working in Oakland. You know, Al would bring a player in who could run fast and all that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I can remember we signed this kid, Randall Williams. He was a wide receiver down at Dallas. He ran 4.33.
Played for the Cowboys. Right?
You know, and the minute I signed him, you know, I said, we'll never get rid of this guy. Like, we're never going to be able to get rid of him. Because Al's going to watch him, and he's going to make the coaches practice coaching on him. And so that becomes the conflict, right? We're trying to develop this guy that the guy has no chance to develop. Like, he's not any good. He can run fast, but he's not a football player. And so when the general manager is in charge of the coaches, then he's sitting there saying, well, that coach isn't very good. He's not developing the talent. And that may be true. But there's also truth to the coach might not be able to develop him because the player isn't any good.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It's just that you're building a system that doesn't work. So if the head coach and you are joined at the hip, and you are working towards an understanding of player development, and you're both on the same philosophical page, and everybody that comes in the building understands it, then, and the coach is leading his staff and demanding from his staff, then I think that works. I think Schneider's smart enough to know in Seattle that I want to be involved with helping you bring guys in the building, but you're going to handle them once they get in the building.
Yeah. The dynamics of an NFL organization, I think, are incredibly fascinating, and we'll see how this plays out in Nashville as other places as well here. But before we head to break, did want to mention the Raiders yesterday here locally introduced their general manager, Tom Telesco, who they went ahead and hired. We were curious to see who they would go with, whether it was going to be Dodds or Champ Kelly. It sounds like Champ Kelly might stay with the organization here with Telesco being the general manager. But your thoughts here on Telesco?
I think you know, at the end of the day, Mark Davis didn't feel Champ Kelly was ready. And I think he wanted to keep Champ Kelly in his building. And I think, you know, they brought Ed Dodds in, you know, and Dodds wants to build his own organization structure from what he wants and probably didn't include Kelly. And I'm sure Telesco said, I'll include Kelly. And I think there was a lot of infighting in there. I think initially there was people that wanted Kelly. And then I think Telesco really became the compromise candidate. And so Tom's got his work cut out for him because he's walking into a really tough situation in terms of understanding with the dynamics within that building.
Yeah, well, he's an experienced general manager, so I guess,
I tell you what, if I'm the Raiders, I'd hire Tom Coughlin.
Wow, well, I want to ask you about
pick that up on the back.
Yeah, let me ask you about that when we come back from the break.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Well, as we were headed to break, Michael, you mentioned that the Raiders should look to hire Tom Coughlin. This would be kind of in like a president role, as a consultant role. What do you have in mind here? What they should do with Tom Coughlin?
I think if Coughlin should be a consultant to Pierce. I mean, they should pay him to, because Antonio Pierce is going to need help, and I don't know if what the relationship is between him and Tom Telesco, in terms of helping him become a head coach. I mean, you know, this guy's never been a coordinator before. let alone be a, I mean, I know he's won in college, but now he's got Marvin Lewis on the staff, which I think certainly will help him. But this is a really tough obstacle you're facing against the level of comp in the West. So, you know, I think someone like Coughlin can really help him in terms of understanding the, a lot of organization demanding, watch the tape. What do we need to do? What's the problems moving forward? You know, all those things. That's got to come from the head coach, right? You got to have a real, real understanding of the game. If you're not calling plays, you have to have a real understanding of the whole thing, the big picture, right? The big picture. What do we need to do? How do we need to handle it? And, you know, I think to me that that certainly Tom would help him. I know Marvin on the staff will help him. I mean, Marvin would probably offset having to bring Tom in because Marvin can at least help him kind of get him to the point where here's what we need to do. I'm telling you, all these guys that get these head coaching jobs, Brian Callahan, Antonio Pierce with no experience, and the organization just doesn't give them anybody to help them. Like, you know, I mean, it's a hard job to learn on the job. It's impossible to learn on the job. And there should be some kind of way. It happens in college. All these colleges hire these search firms. They put the coach in place, and then they all leave. You know, who's helping the coach win? Who's helping the coach prepare? So, like, whereas we're going to, you know, like Sirianni just admitted that he's now going to go back to, or he is now going to become the CEO of the football operations, right? Don't we have that? You have that quote there, Femi?
Yeah, we do have that clip there, and we can play this sound real quick there. He was asked by the Philadelphia media saying, okay, like, essentially, what is it that you're going to do here in 2024? Here's what Sirianni had to say.
What is your role going to be?
The head coach of the football team.
What does that entail? How does it change?
Yeah, I guess what, you know, it'd be this very similar to what's going on right now. You know, if that mean I'll sit more into defensive meetings at times, maybe, right? Instead of always being in an offensive meeting, maybe I go to a defensive meeting here and there. But my job is to be the head coach of the team, not the head coach of the offense, not the head coach of the defense, not the head coach of the special teams, but be the head coach of the football team.
To be honest, he's going to be the CEO.
Yeah, but going to the meetings doesn't make you the head coach. That doesn't make you the head coach. What makes you the head coach of the football team is philosophically, what do you want? It's your team. What do you want to do? Now, you know, Vic's going to come in there, which, you know, we talked about it last year. They wanted Vic. You know, the Vic wasn't, I mean, you talk about oil and water. I mean, Miami hired Vic. You knew that wasn't going to, I mean, how many times in this summer did we say, at what point is Vic going to go over there and go berserk, right? We kind of knew this was going to happen, right? Like, Mike McDaniel's got his way. Vic's got his way. I don't know if that was ever – it was never going to work, right? And after a year, it's a divorce. You know, it's like the Brendan and Eddie song and fucking Scenes from an Italian Restaurant. You know, it's over, man. After the summer of 75, it ended, right? You knew that was coming. But what I don't think Nick really understands is his job is to be the – to hold everybody to the philosophy of what we're trying to get accomplished. That's his job. Just because you go in a meeting doesn't mean shit. You're, as the head coach, you're the CEO of all the operations. You tie everything together. You anticipate the problems. You do the things that you have to do for the practice schedule. You make sure everybody's on this alignment in terms of where we're going, how we're going to play the game on Sunday. This is what I want to do. This is how I want to play the game. This is what we got to call the game. This is what we want to do. You're not specifically calling plays, but you're setting out the strategy for the game. But if you take the approach you're the head coach and you're still a tactician, you're going to go listen to meetings, you know, players aren't going to buy that. You know, the players aren't going to buy that. You got to be able to stand in front of the team and say, okay, here's how we're going to win the game this week, guys. Here's what we're going to do on offense. Here's what we're going to do on defense. Here's what we're going to do in the kicking game. Here's how we're going to win the game.
Yeah. Anticipating problems is where the Eagles failed this year there after the 10-1.
Oh, that miserably.
Yeah.
Miserably. Like that. Nobody in the Philadelphia media, I don't know if they asked them that, but like, at what point did you realize that your practice habits, your pad level, your conditioning was shitty and that it was never going to get better? At what point did you realize that you had a fundamental issue within your team? Now, you can, in defense of Nick, the team was old. The team's old and the team's slow on defense, right?
Yeah.
You know, we've said that. I mean, the team's old, slow, all that stuff. But, you know, I just got this on here. I love this one. The Eagles have requested an interview with Kellen Moore for their OC job.
Hmm.
Joystick in Philadelphia. I can't wait.
Maybe he'll go get some revenge against the Cowboys. Maybe that's what's going on here. They interviewed Kingsbury, I believe, as well. His name has been surfacing a little bit. He interviewed with Chicago. They ended up going with Shane Waldron. But Kingsbury got interviewed in Philly. But how about Joystick, our guy? Maybe he's going to go over to Philadelphia.
Look, I think to me.
I think Joystick interviewed with Cleveland as well.
I think to me, yeah, Brian Johnson's interviewing Cleveland too. He got fired in Philly, and an hour later, he's interviewing for another OC job. I think to me, if you're going to hire somebody for Jalen Hurts, you better make sure they have an extensive run game and a play-action pass game. Because when Hurts was great, when he was running and operating well, that's what he does. That's his strength. That's why you paid him all that money. If you think he's coming in and running a horizontal read program and, you know, all that, I think you better want to consider that. His legs, his six-back attack is what you have to do. Now, where they get that from, I don't know. And maybe Kellen Moore has that in his dossier. I don't know.
We'll find
out. But you want to talk about oil and water, Kellen Moore and Vic on the staff. Kellen's calling 75 passes and, you know, Vic doesn't get any runs and his defense is on the field all the time. Well, that ain't going to be good.
I don't see that one being fun. Vic made a couple of cameos in the in-season Hard Knocks there, well, for the Miami Dolphins, but you could tell Vic wanted no parts of those cameras hanging out.
No
there.
Part.
He wanted no parts of that, but it was a fun season nonetheless there. I do want to go back to Pierce, though, because let me play the role of Las Vegas Raiders fan, which I am not, but they're obviously all around us here in Las Vegas. If for the Raiders' perspective, why can't this with Antonio Pierce work out the way it worked out for the Detroit Lions hiring Dan Campbell, like kind of being that motivational head coach? And yeah, you're going to want to surround him with some other coordinators and people who can help develop him as a head coach. But why can't, just based on what we saw in the 9 games that he was the interim, when guys were playing for him, they were going to bats, pounding the table, saying we want him as the head coach. Why can't that work out how Campbell worked out for the Lions as they're getting ready to play in the NFC title game?
Well, I think Campbell had more experience. He was around Bill Parcells, so he's got that background. You know, he coached in the league, you know, a longer time. But, yeah, I think that's what you're trying to hope for. I think Campbell came in with an identity, right? Campbell came in with an identity. Campbell came in with a style. But, again, it's your, what is your knowledge? And Campbell, you know, had interviewed for other head coaching jobs as well. So, you know, I mean, I think what you're saying is true. You know, I mean, if you want to be, I'm not saying Pierce won't work. I'm not saying that at all. You know, but the other thing, I think Campbell, when he struggled, he got rid of when they changed offense, Anthony Lynn.
Yep.
Remember, Campbell took over the play calling in his first year.
He did.
Yeah. He took over the play calling. When they didn't fire Lynn, they demoted Lynn. He took the play calling over. So he's actually run a team, offensive team before.
Yeah. Mr. Campbell, obviously, he played for Parcells and the Cowboys, and then obviously went ahead and was with them in Miami, then was an assistant for Sean Payton in New Orleans. So he had experience under a lot of, like, really good head coaches. Pierce was coming from college.
That's why I think it's – and the thing you got to like about Pierce is the fact that he's willing to listen to people, right? So he's not afraid that he doesn't know. That's going to be the key for him. You got to be willing to say, okay, here's where I am.
Yeah, there's no insecurities there for Antonio Pierce. He's willing to take all sorts of advice there as he goes on this mission as Raiders head coach. We have a few minutes left. Joe Barry. He's been dismissed as the Packers defensive coordinator.
Oh, my God.
Big Daddy.
He takes full credit for it, by the way. Full credit.
Maybe he deserves it. Maybe he deserves it.
You know, they should bring him back to Green Bay and have a parade for him because he takes full credit for screaming to the top of his lungs. Look, I think to me, what we saw, this is really going to be an interesting moment in Green Bay's time period, right? Back in the year 83, when I first got in the league, somebody told me this. You know, there were 4 really hot coaches in the National Football League at the time. Dan Henning, John Makovic, Mike Ditka, and Dan Reeves. Ditka and Reeves were on the Cowboys staff, and they were the assistants that had played in the league, had coached in the league, and they were ready to become head coaches. Henning was with Gibbs, and he had this great reputation for being this offensive guru. And Makovic was the Brendan Staley, the analytical thought process guy, and with an unbelievable one at Wake Forest, went to the Cowboys as the OC, got to Dallas, and next thing you know, he's the head coach. Well, what happened was, when you break down what their careers were, and a little bit of this is probably they weren't really great head coaches to begin with, but Henning couldn't fix the defense, and neither could Makovic. Whereas Reeves inherited Joe Collier in Denver, and Dick inherited Buddy Ryan, and they got their careers going. Same thing with Andy Reid. Andy Reid comes to Philadelphia. He hires Jim Johnson, great hire. But then he struggled, and then he struggled. And then finally when he got Spagnuolo, he got that going, right? And then he struggled when Spagnuolo left. So, like, for LaFleur, this is really a moment of, I could probably be the Packer coach for the next 10 years. I got to find my Fritz Schirmer. Mike Holmgren had Fritz Schirmer, right? I got to find my Fritz Schirmer. And you say, well, you know, where is that guy? I think to me, whether he hired Martindale, if he brought Mike Zimmer in, I mean, that's what he's looking for, an older guy who understands the league, who can coach the team, who can develop players, and kind of give him that kind of maturity to grow as a head coach, right? That's what he needs. And he's got to remove his ego. And I know he's upset that they fired Barry, and that he'll say he fired him, but he loved Barry. He did. But he's had two now defense coordinators that have not been the best choices on his part. And I think, to me, if he makes this hire, I think the next 10 years, the Packers can be really good, really good. But this is the defining moment of what he's going to do. And if he gets it right, God bless.
Yeah.
If he gets it wrong, he's going to get his ass fired.
No, I think it's a really attractive defensive coordinator job as well, because contrary to what Big Daddy says, there's some players that have talent on that defense, as we've seen.
Big Daddy specializes in complaining and blaming, right? If he can't complain, he's blaming. If he can't blame, he's complaining. That's his life.
We can't blame Joe Barry anymore since he is now out in Green Bay. We'll wrap things up on the other side. The Atlanta Falcons have been busy this coaching carousel. They've interviewed 14 candidates for the head coaching job, most recently Mike Vrabel in person down there in Atlanta. But I've been wondering to myself, and as many other people have wondered this as well, what's going on with Bill Belichick? Because he's done two interviews with the Atlanta Falcons. That's the only team that he's been reported to have interviewed with. I don't know what else is out there, but do you think where are we at with the timeline here for Bill Belichick and also the Atlanta Falcons?
I love this. Like, they interviewed Bill Belichick. Like, who's interviewing Bill Belichick? Who would know enough about football to interview Bill Belichick? You think, like, Dan Morgan, you know, the new president of the Panthers. Could you imagine him interviewing Bill Belichick? What do you think that might look like? I think what's going on in Atlanta is they're doing a thorough search. I mean, I think to me there's probably resistance within the building of bringing him in, because we know this. People guard their desk. They don't want that. You know, it would mean a change of a lot of ways of doing business for a lot of people. And I think Arthur Blank has to weigh those changes and see what he wants to do. You know, to me, I don't understand how it's taken this long. You know, I don't understand how, you know, there's not more teams interested, but I think it's the way of the league right now. It's the league doesn't want to hand over an organization to one guy. I mean, think about it. Mike Vrabel's on his second interview, right? Or his third. I think, to me, people are intimidated by the knowledge, and they're intimidated by what they perceive as the power surge when it's really a culture surge. Like, to win in the NFL, you have to have a team that operates on three levels and all together. And I'm not sure that everybody's willing to give up their role to do that.
Well, I mean, it goes back to what you said, that not everybody is in it to win it. It's all about guarding your desk, because I'm like, this guy has won a million games. He's won six Super Bowls. Like, it's a no-brainer for me, but maybe not everybody is about winning.
But for people in the building, they could say, well, you know, he doesn't get along. And, you know, the media, you know, because he's not media friendly, the media is not out there saying why. Like, this, like, actually, I think Antonio Pierce and Champ Kelly had a stronger campaign to keep their jobs than the media has on Belichick. Now, there's people in the media that understand, like, this is ridiculous. Like, is there a better – there's people in the league that I get texts from. Like, are you serious that they're taking this long to hire him? But that's because they work in another organization. Like, it's not that complicated.
It's not.
It's really not. It's really not. But people make it to be. Look, Tom Brady had one suitor when he came out.
Yeah.
which is, it's mind-boggling. Oh, by the way, I mean, how about the Brock Purdy telling everybody that, hey, Kyle Shanahan said we might go get Tom Brady, just FYI. That's a whole other thing. It's a whole other podcast, though, for that one. But, yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. When greatness is out there on the open market, it's unprecedented. And the fact that teams aren't fighting hand over fist to try to go ahead and get him, hey, yeah, I don't run an NFL team, so what can I say? All right, Michael, let's get to a new segment here on the GM Shuffle podcast here. Thanks to our friends at Bear. This is the Bear Heart Racing Moments, and we're going to go ahead and look back at some moments from the divisional round and how we can spin it forward into what we think will happen up coming up later on in the championship round here. But your Bear Heart Racing moment comes from last Saturday night's game between the Packers and the 49ers, and it was Brock Purdy struggled throughout the game but made one of the big plays of the game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you sat there and he throws that deep ball over the middle to Jennings for the big catch, you know, kind of, I think it was the third down play where he makes that catch and they get to keep their drive going. You know, it's third and 10. Now, eventually they had a punt on that drive. They eventually sputtered out. But that inside route for 21 yards on a third and 10 to me was good. That was one of my plays. And then I think, you know, on the third and 5 to Ayuk for 10 yards. Those two, to me, were the two best plays, especially on the last drive of the game. The last drive of the game when the chips were down, I thought that, to me, was the best moment.
Yeah, no, that was the Bear Heart Racing moment, according to Michael. For me, it came from the Buccaneers-Lions game, 3rd and 15. It felt like the tide had started to turn towards Tampa's way. Detroit's up 24-17. They get the sack, and it's like, uh-oh, if they get this stop, can they go down the field and tie it? Well, 3rd and 15, Goff over the middle to Amon-Ra St. Brown. St. Brown fights for the extra yardage. They keep the chains moving. Four plays later, they make it a 31-17 game. That faith that they have in Goff, that, hey, when times are rough, we're still going to have confidence in them, that's sort of been the symbol of this turnaround for the Detroit Lions. So that was my Bear Heart Racing moment. And also, did you know that heart disease is the number one cause of death in the U.S. due to often invisible risk factors? Learn more and assess your heart risk factors at checkyourheartrisk.com. Brought to you by Bear Aspirin, the official sponsor of Fans Hearts. That is the Bear Heart Racing moments here.
I take one every day. I take one every day.
There you go. That's good.
I take a Bear every day. Yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
Because just for that reason, I'll say this too. I think we didn't talk about this on Monday, but I don't think enough credit was to the Lions recognize that when they lost Dean and they had to put McCollum in at corner, that ultimately was the reason why the Lions won the game. Because the Lions went after McCollum. That's who they went after. They knew he couldn't cover their receivers one-on-one, and that's really smart. That was a really smart 3rd and 15. Amon St. Brown ran a comeback, boom, banged it in there. You know, that to me is players and plays working in harmony. You know, that's why you have people up in the box saying, hey, look, you know, that corner can't cover us, or that corner got hurt. We know that backup corner's no good. Go after him. But if you're so busy looking at your play sheet and you're not calling play and you're just basically going on to the next play that's on your 3rd and 6th list and you're not aware of the players in the game, you lose out on stuff like that. That, to me, was really an incredible decision by whether it was Ben Johnson, whether it was Campbell or somebody else up in that press box that said, hey, we got to go after that kid. They can't cover us.
Yeah, and that play ended up leading to Amon-Ra St. Brown scoring a touchdown on that drive to go up 31-17, which spins it forward to Conference Championship Sunday, and that's where our DraftKings betting breakdown will begin. Presented by DraftKings Fantasy Sports, check out what DraftKings has to offer this season with code Shuffle, because life's more fun when you're in on the action. DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com for the details. And Michael, let's begin in the AFC title game, Kansas City at Baltimore. Can't wait to see this one. First time the Ravens have hosted the AFC championship game over at DraftKings. They're a 3.5-point favorite, total 44.5, but there's some fours out here in Las Vegas popping up interest
Westgate's
on the Baltimore
got four,
Ravens.
Right?
Yep.
Westgate, I saw Westgate's got a four too. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of fours. I mean, look, you know, I think to me, the past, we talked about this based on analytics, right? 2018, Mahomes, 377 yards, 2 touchdowns. 2019, 374 yards, 3 touchdowns. 2020, 385, 5 touchdowns. 221, 343, 3 touchdowns. All meaningless. None of the players that are going to play in this game, or some of them, aren't there. So again, it's you're using data from the past to analyze the future. No, doesn't work here. I think this is going to be, without Joe Tooney in there at left guard, he's not going to play. you know, this opens this line, which had been playing poorly. If you go back to the Raider game, it's going to come down to, can this defensive front of the Ravens control and put pressure on Mahomes? That's really what it comes down to. The success of this Chief offense has more to do with their improvement in their offensive line, their willingness to give Pacheco the ball, their willingness of Mahomes to adjust his play, right? He's not getting enough credit for it. He's not trying to be throw it down the field. He's trying to be, I'll take the profits. We got some really good, I'll take the calls. I mean, the sail route out of a, he's got three backs in the backfield, and he's got the two tight ends are lined up offset in the backfield, and they get Kelce on a sail route against A.J. Klein. Wide, you know, I mean, Klein can't cover anybody. On the first touchdown pass where Kelce's wide open, yep. You know, he gets in a beater, and they run the cover three beater, and the corner doesn't sink on it, and Kelce's wide open. I mean, they're matching up what they're doing. They're not trying to be explosive. You know, they weren't trying to make up the field score in three plays. And I think that's going to be the challenge, right? I think if you're Kansas City, you saw the Rams come in there and run the ball effectively. It was a back-and-forth game. I think that's kind of what we're going to have. We're going to have a back-and-forth game, and I think Lamar is going to be a real issue because this one thing about I was going through it this morning, and I've got it in my notes here. This Chief defense, which is, you know, we know it's all the time everybody talks about how good they are, but when you break them down, they're 28th EPA play per allowed against the run. Okay, so you can run the Raiders ran the ball on them. Not until the end of the game. The Raiders completed one pass after the first quarter, and the final drive of the game was the only drive they really ran the ball. If you study that, and you know, their run grade and their tackling last week, I thought was really poor. And if they tackle the way they did against Buffalo, right? This will be a problem. And I think one of the things you got to take into consideration, forget about time of possession, because the Chiefs only ran 47 plays last week. They had the fewest time of possession in a long time, right? They only were in five third downs. And so their defense played a doubleheader last week, right? Yep. They played 76 plays. And if the Ravens control the ball for 76 plays, they're not going to have the ease of motion to move the ball against a defense that's much better than Buffalo.
But who do you like?
I like Baltimore. I do. I like Baltimore. I think the 3.5's a good number. I like Baltimore. I hate going against Mahomes, but at some point, scary. You know, I also love Lamar. I think Lamar's really good. And I think this Chief defense will have a hard time stopping the run, and I think they'll make plays on the secondary. You know, I think Snead is a good corner, but he can't cover everybody. With Andrews back and likely, I like it.
Yeah, I like the under at the current numbers here. I'd play under 44.5. I like both of these defenses as well, but I can see that the Baltimore defense being something that Kansas City really hasn't faced all season long. That defense, especially at home, is ferocious. Those linebackers, they're going sideline to sideline there. I like the Ravens to win the game, but at current numbers, I'll go under 44.5. All right, the NFC title game, the Niners starting to see some movement here this morning, Michael. We're now out to 7.5 at DraftKings. The total has also ticked up to 51.5 as well. Still waiting on the status of Deebo Samuel.
I mean, forget Deebo. I mean, they're going to move the ball. Look, let's go through it. Nick Mullins. You know, they beat Nick Mullins. He threw for 411. You know, Dak threw for 345. Nick Mullins comes back again. They beat him again. He threw for 396. Stafford throws for 367. Mayfield throws for 349. Now, you know, they're going to throw the ball. They're going to move the ball. And that's why the number's moving. I think it's 7.5 is too much. I think it'll come back to 7. I might take the points, but I think the 49ers win.
I agree with the move to the over there at the current numbers, 51.5, but there's still a 51 out there if you make sure you shop around. But I see a lot of points in this game. The Niners, they'll score a lot. I think Detroit will have success as well, but I think we get the two home teams advancing to the Super Bowl ultimately here in Las Vegas, to where we get a rematch of the Christmas night game between the Ravens and the 49ers. All right, that does it for this edition of the GM Shuffle. Thank you to our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos. Thank you to all of you out there for listening and viewing. That's why we got all these ad reads now, because of your guys' support. So make sure you continue to subscribe, rate, and review. Michael, enjoy the games this weekend, and I will talk to you on Monday.
Thanks, Benny.